Chris and Chris Talk Movies.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Chris Ferry, and of course this is my co-host.
My name is Chris Huddleston.
And today we are both very excited to be talking to you about the British horror film from 2011.
Yes.
Kill List.
One, two, three. Abracadabra.
Do you have a synopsis for us, Mr. Huddleston?
I do. So Kill List, as you said, is a 2011 British psychological horror film directed by Ben Wheatley. And it stars Neil Maskell, Myanna Buring, and Michael Smiley. In the film, a British soldier joins an old friend in working as contract killers. His disturbed past surfaces as he spins out of control during jobs, and ominous employers raise the stakes. So neither of this had, of us had seen this. And I think what we need to do, we have to talk about the ending for sure. Cause I'm not sure I got it completely. But so I think maybe what we ought to do is just give our just general ideas about the movie, and then we can go in and maybe just go through the story and figure it out, I guess.
Yeah.
So what and, did you think of Kill List?
Well, for those of you who may not listen to, we do spoil these.
And yeah, we're going to have
relatively, I guess it's been out for 10 years, but we spoil the heck out of it. So just be warned.
It is on, if anybody that has Shudder, you can watch it on Shudder, but I think it's also on, you know, you can rent it on Prime, but yeah, we both watched it on Shudder.
So Kill List, I thought it was going to be, I don't know why I thought it was more of a hitman movie, like a thriller than a horror. It's certainly, it's got an interesting pace. It's definitely a slow fuse, right? There's a lot of marital tension in the household. The husband, who's the main character, hasn't worked in 8 months. They've got a small kid. The tension is palpable, and they have some friends over, and it's his best friend who we discover is sort of a work buddy of his and an ex-soldier with him. And then that guy's current girlfriend, who's a younger woman, and they have a pretty good evening. Everybody gets drunk. There is the husband and wife, or our protagonist and his wife, have a screaming fight. I thought all of the performances were great. I thought that the way that it was directed to build that tension was palpable and effective. And it turns out we sort of learn eventually that they're soldiers, as you read in the synopsis, that have gone on to do contract killing. So they are hitmen. And he hasn't worked, but his buddy is like coaxing him to get back in the game. And so he does. And so they go, and then that's when we actually start to see a kill list. They start putting the title of each, you know, the first one is like
the priest. Yeah.
And right. And it's, that's a kind of a, feels like a little bit of a Guy Ritchie motif that
Kill
starts
Bill, maybe
halfway through the movie. Right?
Yeah.
So the movie, I couldn't quite pin it down. And there was some violent, there is some violent stuff, you know, and then there's some sort of torture stuff where they uncover one of the guy, the librarian or whatever, has this sort of back room or storage unit that's got all kinds of pornography in it. And there's a video that made me think of True Detective.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's like a snuff film or something horrible that really triggers these guys. So they kind of, they torture him. I mean, that's the word for it. They take a hammer to him. Well, mostly our protagonist. And the other guy's like, geez, man.
That scene was rough.
Yeah.
It was hard to watch.
And it wasn't that his friend was so appalled by the violence as much as like, this is not clean. Like, you know, you're just making this enormous mess for us. We got to get in. We got to execute this person without asking any questions. Right. It's not our job to like be the judge or the jury here. We're just the executioners, guy. Prior to that, there's a scene where at the dinner party, the younger girlfriend goes into the bathroom. And again, this is like 20 or 30 minutes into the film, it felt like. She takes a mirror off the bathroom wall and she takes a knife out and she carves a kind of a, it isn't, you know, a pentagram, but it's a kind of a Wiccan or a satanic symbol. Reminiscent of something that's drawn at the beginning of the thing. So that's the first glimpse you get of like, oh, she's doing something witchy in their bathroom. What the heck? But again, this film has been about domestic unrest up until this point, you know? And then, I forgot this. So then they find a dead animal on their lawn, and the cat they own, which has been established, they think the cat has killed it. And he brings it inside. It's a rabbit. He brings it inside and he cooks it. And he eats it. And that sounds crazy town. But it's the way they do it, I think, is quite brilliant because they've got this adversarial husband and wife dynamic going on. And they really justify him eating it like he's trying to prove how macho he is. And
he's showing off, the wife says at one
exactly.
point.
Exactly. He's showing off. And, you know, on paper, if you were pitching it to me, I'm like, that's not going to work. But that, it actually, they make it work. I think the directing is very effective through most of this.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm rambling on and on. Do you want to get a word in edgewise and then we can go back and forth? Or
yeah, sure. I mean, without getting too much more into the plot. Yeah, I thought it was really, you texted me and he said, you know, this was an interesting film. And that's a word that comes to mind for me as well. And it, like you said, it's somewhat deliberate in the beginning. And then, and I kept thinking, so it's on Shudder, which Shudder is a, for people don't know, is a streaming service that is horror movies basically. And then they have some stuff that isn't exactly horror, but you know, I'm 2/3 of the way through this movie and I'm thinking, this isn't a horror movie. This is a, you know, about, it's kind of a drama about hitmen. And so then so as you said, they're, you know, they kill the one guy who they call the librarian who has this, you know, and you don't see any clips of it, but it's some kind of horrible film where you can hear a woman screaming, you know, and
yeah.
Presumably there's torture or person's murdered or whatever. But then they go to this big estate where they have to go through a tunnel. And
I'm sorry to grab the mic back again for a second, but there are a couple of other breadcrumbs that are significant throughout. The first person they kill, they go to meet the guy who's their contractor or whatever, and he cuts the guy's hand open.
Mm-hmm.
And I mention it because there are these sort of things that feel symbolic, right? The cutting of the hand feels symbolic. The wound sort of festers. So it starts to feel like these things are devices that are symbols of something throughout. When they kill the first person they kill as a priest, And he turns and sort of smiles at our main character just before he shoots him in the head. And he says, thank you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And our characters are like, we are, they're like, what the, what was that all about? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it, man. Let's just, you know, it's a job. So there are these sort of, we talk about it being a slow burn in a methodical kind of a hitman movie, but that there are these things that feel like horror, you know, they're placed there mm-hmm. and they will have meaning later. So you start collecting these kind of shiny pebbles as you go and being like, okay, I made note of that. I mean, they're not passing. They're moments in the film that feel like they're like out of the Omen or out of some more supernatural kind of thing. Although nothing else in the movie feels like that so far.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yes, eventually we do get to the final boss, so to speak, is a prime minister or no, an MP.
An MP,
it's yeah. a British film.
Yeah. Well, and let's double back a little bit on that as well. So his hand gets infected and he goes to the doctor, and the doctor just asks him these odd questions about, you know, if he's depressed and about his sex life and these things. And he finally says, where's Dr. So-and-so, like his normal doctor? And I think the guy just ignores it or says, yeah, he's not here anymore. And just says some really odd thing to him. And like, doesn't give him, he's like, are you going to look at my hand? And he yeah. just does, you know.
And, so, I mean, for me, what did you think so far? And me, I'm like, okay, so she carves a symbol on their bathroom. He eats. I mean, it's not the cat, right? I mean, she has skinned this rabbit. It's there.
Because later,
They kill the cat.
They kill the yeah. They find and their hang cat it up, dead.
Hanging, right?
Yeah.
It's not a hawk. It's clear somebody's killed this cat.
Left it as soon as the woman carved the symbol, then you know there's these people that they're killing are in a cult, and she's going to be in the cult. You know, you just don't know how it's going to.
Because yeah. she breaks up with yeah. the friend, and yet she continues to come over and hang out with the wife.
Yeah.
And that creeps him out. She's like, what is she doing there? You know?
Well, and when they're on one of their jobs, they're in their hotel room. He's in his hotel room and he looks out the window, and that girlfriend is like standing like out in the, you know, like waving at him. And also, when you were talking about the priest thanking him, the librarian guy thanks him too, because when the friend goes and is getting the money out of the guy's safe, he's like, I'm just going to tell you this, you know, before he gets back. But he thanks him. And what does he say? Like,
because I know who you are.
Yeah. And it's like, it's an honor to meet you or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and no one is more confused than our protagonist. I mean, yeah, we are not more confused than our protagonist.
He's completely confused. So then the final person that they're supposed to kill is this MP. And they have to go through this long, tunnel that they walk through to get to this big estate where he lives.
Well, and they're in the tunnel. They go through the tunnel. No, they're kind of camping out in the woods, scoping it out, right?
I think they go through, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think they camp out before the tunnel. And
then something, then there's some torches and some sounds, and they're like, what the heck? And then there's this whole group of people carrying flaming torches marching out into the woods. Not right at them, but in their general direction. And they're like, oh, snap. Like, okay, move, 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 move. And sorry, you go.
Well, so, yeah. So they come up on, so there's a procession of these people with the torches. Some of them are in white robes. Some of them are completely naked. And then they eventually get to a stopping point.
They're wearing like wicker masks.
Yeah. They're wearing like wicker masks, that's sort of animal masks like. And they finally get to a point where they stop, and there's a, they have a noose set up. And a young woman gets in the noose and waves at the other people and then hangs herself.
Right. It's very midsummer. Like,
yeah, very midsummer, Wicker Man ish. And so then, and I'm forgetting, Jay is the main. So it's Jay and Gal are the two guys. So Jay, who's the protagonist, he's just like, F this. And, other guy's like, there's too many of them. And he just starts shooting at them.
Yes. And there's really maybe 50 people. I mean, it's a huge group of people, and there are two guys in the woods. He does have like an AR-15 style weapon, but still, You know, so they all kind of turn towards the gunshots and they all start running after these guys who take off. And that's how we end up in the tunnel.
And they, and this is where, I mean, this is where we're into horror movie territory at this point. It very quickly becomes
now
a horror movie.
We're like, right.
And here's where you get into one of the really the first questions that I have. So the people are chasing after them. They're chasing them into the tunnel. Jay and Gal are shooting them and everything. And they screech like, and they don't sound like humans. They right. screech like, I mean, they look like humans and they die when they get shot, but they screech like animals. So I don't know what that was supposed to mean. And one of them stabs Gal and he's, you know, his intestines are coming out and everything. And so Jay, he's like, I'm dead, mate. You know? And so Jay puts him out of his misery and shoots him.
Yeah. He says, so, please. He's like, end it. Just yeah. do me.
And one thing that that we didn't mention is Jay's wife. So they have he's married and they have a son. And so they have a cottage and she says that, and she knows apparently what he does, what their work is, presumably. And he says, I'm going to take, I think the son's name is Sam. I'm going to take Sam to the cottage until the job is over. So
because of the cat. Right. The cat's clearly yeah. a sign that both of them are like, all right, well, now they know what this is, a message. Now they know, you know, who else would it be?
Yeah.
But these so people know, we're involved with, and they know where we are. And this is a sign. We got to take the kid and get it. Why they have a little kid, I do will never understand. Mm-hmm. Like, why these two? And she's like ex-military or special forces, too. She doesn't seem like a hit person, but she understands what he does.
Yeah.
She knows what he
and
does.
She knows how to use a gun.
You and know, she's well. Bothering him the whole first 20 minutes of the movie. They need money. She's like, you got to go back to work. You know? So.
And you don't know if this is.
But they're like, oh, sweetie, don't worry. You know, mommies and daddies argue. And I'm like, what? Yeah. What are we doing?
And you don't know if this is the only work that he does or right. or not, you know, because
certainly not at first.
Yeah. Cause the friend kind of drags him back into it. But anyway, so he now goes to the cottage where the wife and the son are, and the, you know, the cult people have come to the cottage cause they're, you know, he goes outside and there's torches out there and everything. And he runs out to, confront them. And then in the meantime, they knock him unconscious.
They get him, yeah.
And also some of them are breaking into the cottage, and the wife takes, he's given her a gun, and she takes some of them out.
He gets a couple of them before they clunk him on the head, and she gets a couple of them in the house, and there's a sort of a Sam Peckinpah, straw yeah. dogs, home invasion type thing where, you know, you can hear the sounds, and she doesn't build traps for them, but that's the vibe. She gets one as one climbs through the window, and...
And I felt like if I have a criticism of the movie, it, you know, it's a slow burn kind of, it's never boring. I mean, there's always interesting stuff happening.
Not boring.
But then I feel like once you get to the final act, it's almost like things go too quickly. And I don't know how you felt. It's these nighttime scenes are very dark, and I was having a hard time telling exactly what was yeah. going on. I don't know if it was just the contrast on the TV, but if you want to say the final couple of scenes, what happens?
Yeah. So he wakes up and they've dragged him.
The title that we see now is The Hunchback.
Right. And they've dragged him out into the field or whatever and stripped him to his waist and given him like a wicker mask or something to put on. And they give him a knife. And then this, and so push him into the circle, and then into the circle they push this hunchback figure in a sheet. Mm. And again, some of the people are wearing sheets. Some of the people are nude. Most of the people are masked. Some are in white robe sheets. Some are in sort of black robe sheets. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. And a knife fight ensues. And he prevails and stabs the hunchback. To death, which as the hunchback.
And let me say one thing before you say that. And again, the hunchback. Anytime he stabs the hunchback a couple of times, and the hunchback, you know, stabs him a couple of times, like while they're fighting. And the hunchback squeals like an animal, like doesn't sound like a human.
Right.
And continue. Right.
And I want to unpack all of that in a minute, but we'll just go ahead and get to the gory ending. So turns out the hunchback was his wife with their son sort of strapped to her back. So that's the kid was the hump. And she laughs, right? Looks up at him as she dies and laughs. The kid's already dead. We're spared seeing the stabbed kid. We just see his hand. That's the reveal. And then everybody claps and takes off their masks, and they put a crown, a wicker crown on his head. And we get a shot of the guy that the leader of this remaining group is the guy that hired them in the first place and cut his hand. And he just looks supremely pleased, like everything's come to fruition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's the end of the movie.
The doctor who had gone to see, he's there. He's one of the cult people.
The girlfriend. And then the girl who is there, yeah, right? Everybody who's still alive, we recognize from the movie, has all been part of this. So I do think the directing beat to beat was effective, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's some genuinely upsetting stuff. Like, as soon as we saw the hunchback, I was like, that's got to be his wife and the hunch. I mean, I've sort of figured that out. You don't want it. You genuinely don't want that to be the case.
Yeah.
But I wasn't surprised when it happened. I wasn't clear on a whole bunch of things. Okay, I wasn't clear.
I thought I was like, am I just stupid? Like, nope.
Ultimately, the feeling I was left with at the end of this movie, as much as I liked it, never a dull moment, slow though it was, terrific performances, terrific directing, with the exception that it left me feeling disappointed because I was confused. I felt somehow that there was a sort of a bigger message here about violence or about... And did you ever see the movie Man Bites Dog?
I haven't. No, I'm familiar with it, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's a rough movie, but it comments on... There's the meta commentary on it is about cinema and media and our glorification of violence and how that is implicit participation in the violence, right? And so I thought maybe there's some of that going on here, that we're applauding this killer, you know, that somehow violence destroys everything, that the sort of loving family life and creativity and the birth of a kid and the sort of quote unquote normal life is incompatible with the violence of the other half of his life. That I just felt like there was a bigger message that I was supposed to take away from this, being like, oh, it is, it's true. Look, behold the evidence of this. But that didn't land. That wasn't clear. I thought that the kind of wicker, the straw-masked people out in the woods and the semi-nude felt very derivative. I think we've seen that in a ton of other movies.
Sure.
I didn't get the animal squeals. That felt to me like a production design thing later. Mm-hmm. This needs to be more scary, right? Because that felt imposed. We never find out who these people are or what their agenda is or why they recognize him, why he, for example, is more like they keep saying what happened in Ukraine was bad. Like his last job was this Ukraine thing and Ukraine went bad and everybody seems to know about it, right? The guy who hires him knows about it. His best friend knows about it. He's just like, you know what happens, man? You got to get back on the horse. If something he did or happened in Ukraine was supposed to be significant, we never learn what that was. There's never any understanding. I mean, at first I thought, is he supposed to be the devil? Like she feeds him something. There's a ritual. She marks the house and then he eats the rabbit and somehow they're preparing him to be the vessel of Satan or something. But we never, you know, in The Omen, there is exposition that brings it around. Like this is, you know, there's the Bond villain monologue where somebody explains the plan, right? And you've played right into it, you know,
You mentioned
there was never that here.
You mentioned Midsommar. And that doesn't have the villain with all the exposition and everything, but you understand by the end of the movie, what has happened, what's going on,
right?
Generally, you know, And I like, you know, there's a lot of movies, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I like movies with ambiguity, but there's so much ambiguity in this that it's just like, you know, I was thinking the wife laughs. So you think, okay, she's part of the cult, but if she's in the cult, why did she kill the other people in the cult? You know?
Right. Well, you can kind of interpret the laugh as just like a laugh at the absurdity of all of this, or I knew it. I knew you always hated us. Like, this is what you always wanted.
Right.
You know, but it's unclear. And I think that what it made me realize is there's so much I really love about this movie, but man, making a movie is hard. Like, just making it feel cohesive. And then I think of like Back to the Future, which just feels almost like a perfect movie. It trips right along. One thing leads into the other. The comedy lands, the drama lands. You care about the characters. It never loses steam, right? It's rewatchable every single time. And you get used to that. It's like, oh, that's a good movie. And you're like, that's so hard to pull off. Like, how rare are those movies that you don't ever feel like, well, it sags a little when we get into that one place, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that this is so ably done, except it's a combination of the kind of slow burn beginning where it's like, oh, this is a family drama. Oh, no, it's actually a hitman movie. Oh, no, it's horror. That I'm not saying a movie has to be one single thing, but there's the way in which you pace from one thing to another. They do have different vibes. Like, if you were to write a piece of music that starts off as, I don't know, you know, one genre and then transitions into another genre and ends in a third totally different genre, there's like palpable vibes that change as you shift from what's really a domestic drama to a kind of a espionage thriller, hitmen staking out a place, breaking into places, to horror, being chased through dark tunnels by screaming masked people with knives trying to disembowel you, you know?
Yeah.
And that didn't quite float for me, you know, that didn't quite harmonize, in my brain, by the end of it. And I felt really, I was with it. I was still on board. But I felt cheated out of some, I wanted there to be some explanation. Not even, I was going to say, let me off the hook. I don't need to be let off the hook. I just need to go through all that and then not have, and I was paying attention, but not have any sense of understanding of like, what? Why did I just sit through? What was I? What am I being told here? Because the vibe at the end is very much like, haha, now do you see? And I'm like, no.
You know, and I think that really frustrating. I think if a movie has a message, like one thing that I was thinking about kind of in the middle of this movie is it struck me a little bit funny, you know, not funny, haha, but the Jay guy starts to really, you know, he gets really affected by the horribleness of what they've seen that these people are doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he and Gal go back to the wife and Gal is telling the wife, he needs help. Like, he's sick, you know, he's like gone over the,
yeah, he's becomes alarmed by his friend's behavior. Like, his friend is really kind of coming unhinged, and he sees that.
Yeah. But I was thinking, watching this, I was thinking about, you know, how strange it is that, and I thought maybe the movie was going to wind up being a commentary, something like this, and it doesn't seem to be. But like you were saying, just violence in general, where, you know, how odd it is that we have people who, and we don't really know exactly what these guys did for the British military, but they were in, you know, Kyiv. But, you know, you think about the idea of somebody goes off to war and they can kill lots and lots of people, but because it's in war, that's viewed as by our society, as, you know, American society and British society and probably a lot of other societies, as acceptable, and they're heroes. And then that person comes back, and if it's like, you know what, I'm really good at killing people, I'm going to be a hitman. It's immoral to do that. You know, even if you're killing terrible people, society's like, no, being a hitman is bad. You know, if you go and kill for your country, that's good. But if you kill for money, you know, somebody pays you to kill people, that's bad. And I was thinking about the how odd it is that their job is to kill people, but there's a hierarchy of morality in that. You know what I mean? Where Gal's like, okay, if you just go in and you just shoot the guy in the head, that's okay. But if you go in and you're pounding him with a hammer or whatever, that's bad. You're crazy. You know what I mean? Isn't that like an odd?
Yeah, no, but I really think that goes to the heart of what the movie is sort of trying to say is that from one angle, we glorify and enjoy violence as escapism and entertainment. And from another angle, it's bad and upsetting and right. And yeah. I think the movie very carefully shows us different, right? I mean, this guy has no problem. His friend has no problem convincing him to come back into the hitman world, right? To come back to work with him. He's a little disturbed. He's religious, I guess. He's a little disturbed by them killing a priest. But he sort of gets like, you know, oh, sometimes, you know, I don't like the flavor of this, you know? But when the victim seems to want it or thank you, you know, appreciate it, that upsets them, right? That's not as it's supposed to be. And then the friend gets upset when they start to kind of color outside the lines. Like at first, they go to the library and they both see what he's got. It's genuinely upsetting stuff. And they sort of use it to justify killing him. If anybody deserves it, it's this guy, right? And he says, I'm just a librarian, you know, I just keep the stuff. And then so our lead character gets out of him, like, who made this? You know, who, then you're a librarian for who? Where are they? And that's when he tortures out of him information about the other perpetrators. And that's when the friend starts to get uncomfortable with it. And in the time, it's a little bit like, This is messy, man. Like, I don't object to you torturing this scumbag per se, but we're leaving. This is sloppy hitman work, right?
It's a self-preservation thing.
Yeah. And he even says, you're cleaning this mess up, right? But then, and we left this out earlier in our chat, then is a point where our lead says, I'm going to that place. And he's like, his friend is like, what are you talking about? Right? We've been given this kill list of like four people. This is number two or number three, right? He's like, what, where does that fit in? Now you're this vigilante. Now you're Batman, right? Now you're going to go hunt down the bad guys. So what are you talking about? It's a spectacularly bad idea. But the guy goes and does it, and Vigilante finds the place and busts in there, and his friend is waiting for him. 20 minutes, he gets his gun, and he follows him in, and it's just a bloodbath. Like, this guy has just shot his way into this building. I want to say compound, but so there's blood everywhere, and it's clearly he's just kind of kicked indoors and killed whoever he's found.
Yeah. Kills a dog, even.
Yeah, yeah. And exactly. His friend follows him in. He's like, oh, has it been 20 minutes? And he's like, what are you doing? You know? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And that's when he goes and talks to the wife. She's like, he needs help. He's cracked. Like, this is a loose cannon now. Like, he is just killing indiscriminately. And I'm not saying these were good people, but, you know, we are way outside the lines here. And that's when they start talking about, well, maybe we can get replacements and we can get off of this job, right? Maybe we can back out of it. And they actually go back to talk to the guys, and he's like, this is your job now. There's no backing out of this. But it does escalate. It does sort of break bad and then break worse for our central character. And again, directing wise and performance wise, this is all done very clearly and very ably. I was impressed by it, and I was really engaged with it.
Same.
Just couldn't get it across the finish line in a way that, I say that I didn't like it so much that I feel like I want to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, well, maybe on a second viewing, I'll get things that I didn't get.
I do want to read
some. I
don't
know. I watched it pretty carefully. You know, I
do want to read some interpretations. I mean, yeah. I don't feel like there were clues that we missed or something like that. And, you know, I don't even, a couple of things, you know, if it's a commentary on kind of like you were saying about violence and violence in entertainment and all that kind of thing. This is a movie that makes, it's not a John Wick or something like that, where it's like, right. Wow, that'd be cool to go and kill a bunch of bad guys or whatever.
Right.
It's just very mundane and boring most of the time, you know, kind of what they're doing. And the, you know, the actual kill, the, you know, the part where he's, I mean, that,
right.
Like I said, that scene was really gnarly where he's
and
hammering.
It's not sexy, right? Our two leads look like guys. Like if really you told me they worked guys. In a, if they worked in a meatpacking plant, you'd believe it.
Exactly.
They're not ugly people, but they're not, they're not Fassbender, right? The killer, which was the sexy French, like running monologue about a guy, you know what I mean? The whole thing about that was like, oh, the hitman is a solo, but he likes to perch in the tree. And it's very, it's supposed to be very like, ooh la la, you know?
Yeah.
And this is not that, you know, but they, one of the things I actually liked about it in that genre is just how confident, like they didn't skulk around and wear masks. They just would walk up to a door and they were looking around, but they would calmly and competently and confidently break into a place and scope it out, you know? So whatever they were doing for the military or in Kyiv or wherever it was, they were good at it. Like they were comfortable doing the thing that they did. Which is interesting to me. I think that's also part of what the movie is trying to, I want to say teach us, but I feel bitter that I didn't, I don't know. We're talking about it. Maybe we did learn the lesson. I don't know.
Yeah. I think, and you know, I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I definitely think a movie that explores the idea of, I mean, we definitely have seen movies where the dramatic side of it, where somebody comes back from war and they can't, you know, it's like, you know, the idea is, you go and, you know, you're doing all these, all this killing. And as soon as you get back to society, that has to be shut off. You can't, that part of you that you were able to get to that point of doing all those horrible things, you can't do that anymore because you're in civilized society, you know? And so there's been movies that have explored that from
the incompatibility of,
but I think you know, guys coming back from war and then, it's like, okay, I'm good at killing. I'm going to do this as a job, but society frowns on that. I think that's a really interesting thing to explore that I don't know that this movie is exploring.
Well, it introduces this kind of cult thing at the end, which I feel like it's its own trope.
Yeah.
That's its own horror movie. I mean, Midsommar, that's that movie. So why? I feel like that actually muddies the water. Like, a cult operates, even if it's bonkers, a cult operates on a set of rules, right, that the cult leaders bend to their whatever, but they have this kind of mental architecture that they're operating on. And part of the horror of the cult thing is the realization of the people caught up in it that, like, oh my God, it's the Wicker Man or what, you know, oh my God, I see what they're doing here. You know, they've chosen me for these crazy reasons, or they've chosen my girlfriend or whatever. And we never get that here. Like, why they've hired him to kill these guys? Why this guy in particular?
Yeah, we don't know why the people are on the list. You know, we don't know, was the librarian guy, did he have to be killed because
he had filmed list, right? Yeah. So the movie's called Kill List. I think if the movie was called, like, Irreversible, and I don't want to spoil Irreversible if you haven't seen it. That is a hard movie to watch.
I know.
But it's a movie that is shot chronologically in reverse. So it starts at the end, and we work our way scene by scene back to the inciting incident. And talk about a movie that underlines the senselessness of violence and, you know, and the irreversibility of it, right? So the title Irreversible It has a very clear and I think very smart double meaning. The movie is literally in reverse, but you can't reverse it. And the actions mm-hmm. that people take in the movie that they feel, the violent actions that they feel are, you know, retribution, are often misguided, and it's just all damage, right? There's no, it's not justice. It's just all damage, and all of it is irreversible. So to me, that title has this crazy resonance, and it's part of the key at the end. And mm-hmm. so I kept saying kill list, you know, like, are the wife and kid part of, like, is this a list of different kills? I just couldn't, you know what I mean? It just seems a little vague and a little arbitrary to land somehow. And he doesn't seem particularly, he's in shock at the end when he realizes it's his wife and kid. But you know what I interpreted it as, he just felt sort of numb, and her laugh is sort of like, this is what you always wanted. You know, you always want to be rid of us. But that's just my interpretation of that moment. And then there's credits.
And I kept thinking there's going to be, you know, he has amnesia or something and he doesn't remember that he's part of this cult, you know. That's kind of what I was expecting, that it's all these memories are going to come flooding back to him at the end.
Could have been that, yeah.
But
it wasn't.
You don't see that. It doesn't happen. So I don't know. So, I mean, I overall liked it. I mean, and have you seen any of this director's other movies? Are you familiar with anything else he's done?
Not off the top. It seems so familiar to me. Will you look up? Are you looking up?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at right now. So his...
Maybe I haven't.
He did a really interesting one that I guess the only one that I've seen of his is called High Rise. It's from 2015. It has Tom Hiddleston in it, and it's that one. That would be an interesting one to do sometime for the show, because it's literally a high rise built in England, and it's kind of the higher class people are at the top and the lower class people are at the bottom, and hilarity ensues, you know.
But it's also a really satire. It's
a satire, yeah. But his other movie, so Kill List was just his second film. His first one's called Down Terrace, which I'm not familiar with. Then Kill List, and then he did one in 2012 called Sightseers, and that is about it's supposed to be a comedy basically, but it's about a couple that go, I guess it's a very English thing where you just sort of, it's almost like magical mystery tour, I think, where you just sort of do like a little tour around, and it turns out that the boyfriend is a serial killer and he's killing people, and then the girlfriend joins in with him. But my understanding is it's supposed to be funny. It's basically like they just sort of kill people that annoy them or whatever.
That's hilarious.
It does, yeah. And then he did A Field in England, which is I think that's a very psychedelic one where it's like a group of soldiers in, I don't know, the 1600s or something like that in a field. And I think they get into some kind of psychedelics or something. And then, High Rise, and then Free Fire, which I don't know what that is. 2018, he did one called Happy New Year, Colin Burstead, and then a movie called Rebecca. And then In the Earth, which is supposed to be, it's another horror-ish one. And then he did Meg 2, The Trench. That was like his sellout movie, I guess. You know. So,
I did see High Rise, and I found
it. Oh, you did? Okay.
I found it confusing in similar ways. Like,
okay.
Like this film, it felt like...
It's been
like,
several years since I saw it, so I...
You know, like it had a message, and it was sort of allegorical, and it used that as a starting point. Like, I imagine if you read the script, it would all seem pretty right on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it's... This project and that project are sort of set up, and they're like, oh, people will get it by the end. And by the end, they have sort of steered into the deliberately, a little bit obfuscating. Because like, well, we don't want it to be too obvious. So let's make some choices that kind of dance away from that a little bit and let people put it together themselves. And they did that a little too much.
Yeah.
Because the Tom Hiddleston, this one did not have comedic elements in it, aside from the occasional banter the friends have. This is not a funny film.
No.
And High Rise, clearly, I kept being like, does this think it's a comedy? You know, because it wasn't funny.
Mm.
But it was absurd. But it was also it kind of upsetting.
Really outlandish by the end.
Yeah. And so you're kind of like, you know, I think you got to pick. You can make a drama that's got funny parts in it. That's life. You can do productions of Lear that have moments of absolute hilarity in them. Again, that's life. But it's hard to make a comedy that goes really upsetting places. Do you know what I mean? Like, and people try it with horror to make funny horror movies like Shaun of the Dead or whatever. And I there's a part of me that feels like you can't really have it both ways. You can make a comedy in the horror genre where you get lots of the gross splat or zombies or whatever else, like Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Yeah. Where he's like, those are campy. They're very much on his brand. There is a lot of great splatter and horror stuff that he's clearly delightfully into. But it's not, those aren't the kind of movies that give you a nightmare. You know, that's just like campy Saturday night horror fun, you know? And then really horrifying movies aren't funny.
No,
you know?
Typically, no.
And so I feel like sometimes when you try to really cross genres, you're setting yourself up for a challenge that's, you know, I think you have to have a really clear, compelling reason. Even when Kubrick played with cross genre stuff, it's like, I don't know, it makes me think of going to a restaurant that's like a fusion restaurant. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's an air of like, okay, we're going to make sushi pizza because that's how good cook we are. And we're going to wow you with this sushi pizza. And as far as I'm concerned, my first thought is like, that sounds unappetizing to me.
Yeah.
And so if I don't take a bite of it and go, oh my God, that is delicious, you failed. I mean, if I take a bite of sushi pizza and I go, weird. I mean, yeah, I guess I see what you're doing here. I'm never going to order that again, right? That's not what I want to eat. And sometimes movies like this sort of feel like that.
Yeah. And, you know, with the ambiguity thing and the symbolism and all that, if there's symbolism in this, I feel like I was thinking about a movie like Under the Skin. I know we've talked about Under the Skin before. Did we do it for the show?
I don't remember.
I know we've discussed it, but you know, that's a movie that's very ambiguous.
Yeah.
But I feel like by the end, you understand what has happened.
You understand enough.
You understand enough. And it's a movie with like, there's long stretches of no dialogue.
Yeah.
But you figure it, you're like, okay, I understand what's going on. And if the audience completely doesn't get it, then you know, if it's so ambiguous and the symbolism is so obscure that it's just like, well, I made this for the three people that are going to get what I'm, you know what I mean? I feel like you failed as a filmmaker.
That's a great one to bring up in relationship to this one, though. Whether or not we did it, I think that is a terrific movie. And there's a lot of similarities to this one. It feels very independent, feels very small budget, even though it's got Under the Skin's got Scarlett Johansson at the center of it. It feels very indie, right? And it feels very like you're in the car with people. Like it really feels authentic, but it just doesn't feel like a big Hollywood glossy thing.
Well, and I mean, there were scenes where she drove around in a van and they had a hidden camera and she just picked up guys off the street and they got in the, you know, she interacted with them and things.
Yeah.
So that's about as authentic as you could get.
And this one, likewise, like the domestic scenes where he's arguing, I recognize that actress. He looks a little familiar to me too. Everybody in this movie looks a little familiar to me.
Yeah.
But I really, again, I think the acting in it is fantastic. And when they're screaming at each other, and the kids in the other room, you know, it made me feel like a little kid again, being like, oh, don't let them hit each other. You know, it's like, it was really, really effectively upsetting.
Yeah. Very naturalistic acting.
Yeah. And not in a horror movie way, like you're afraid daddy's going to beat mommy to death, but that you were afraid it would come to blows. Like you really wanted
jump scares in this or really like music stings or anything like that.
Nope. And it's only at the end when you get into the weird squeals that the people are making and the masks and the chasing through the dark. And I was kind of like, what?
You know, and like you said, they didn't need that because think about it, you know, being out in the woods and a group of people with torches chasing after you is the thing of literal nightmares. Yeah. You know, that's what my nightmares are like, you know, not exactly, but like a group of people chasing after you, trying to kill you. That's horrifying. And that was horrifying when they're in the tunnel and the people are trying to get them and everything, you know, I thought that was super effective.
But the whole idea of this sort of seven thing where it's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to have you kill your wife and child. And, you know, it's just this whole machinations of it. I was like, you get away with it in seven because the psychopath's whole thing was the seven deadly sins and he's the last one. Sorry if you guys haven't seen seven. But you know what I mean? So it's like that all kind of clicks into place within the horror and you feel horrified by it. And, you know, and in this one, nothing clicked into place. It just got more and more outside of the box, but I felt like I was supposed to feel like, now the final piece has fallen. You know, and I was like, I don't know. I'm just really confused.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I expected to get on here and you'd be like, well, it meant this. And I was just like, oh, I totally missed that.
So, I mean, I'm on the fence about it because I do think it's so, from a directing perspective in terms of scene to scene and beat to beat, and from an acting perspective, I do think it was really enjoyable. It was engaging. It is a slow burn. I don't think it's really a date movie. And there's just so much about it that I thought was really interesting and really well done, but ultimately I did find it pretty unsatisfying. So whether or not I would recommend it leaves me as kind of a 2.5 stars, you know?
It's kind of like a thumb sideways for me. I really liked it. And if they had stuck the landing, which, you know, there have been so many of these cult films like this. So it's, you almost feel like, well, how do you have this end in a satisfying way that's really different? Yeah. But
although this was a relatively early, at 2011, it was early in the spate of them.
Sure, yeah.
Right? Wasn't Midsommar like 2010 or something like that? I don't mean, it was right around the same.
Midsommar was well after this. Midsommar was like 2019 or 2018 or something like that, yeah.
Later than
that. Which Midsommar, spoiler alert, is, to me, is essentially, which I don't think you've ever seen, but it borrows really heavily from The Wicker Man.
Yeah.
So I was a little disappointed with Midsommar because it was just, I knew where it was going and basically what was going to happen because I'd seen The Wicker Man. But yeah, I'm glad that I finally saw Kill List. It's one that, no pun intended, has been on my list to see it at some
point. It's been on my kill list.
It's been on my list. So yeah.
It's right above your kiss. So the killer, your kiss is alone.
Yeah. So I think where the actor, and I should look up his name, but this Jay, he was in a really interesting show called Utopia, a British show that they actually remade for Prime, an American version of it. But if you can find it, it's not easy to find, but if you can find the original version, I would highly recommend that. The guy he plays, I guess this guy's been kind of typecast because he plays a hitman in that as well. But it's basically, there is this underground comic book that I think is called Utopia, that it's like this artist had done this and it was like his life's work and it was never published, but people find it somehow and it unravels this conspiracy, and people that have copies of it are getting killed and all this kind of stuff. But it's really, really well done. The Prime show is not bad either, but I don't think they ever got to finish it because they only did one season of it. But the I think the British version is two seasons. But I wanted to briefly talk about, I saw three new movies. The first one I don't really want to discuss because I think we should do it for the show at some point, but that was Poor Things.
Yeah.
Which really, I can't wait till you see that because I definitely want to talk about that one. And I would, if there's any way you can see it in a theater, see it in a theater.
Oh, it's
you
worth
wouldn't
it.
Necessarily think it's that kind of movie, but the production design on it is amazing. It's some of the best production design I've seen.
It might still be in theaters. I might be able
it's
to go.
It's still
to
playing. I would go. I'd see it in the theater if you can. The second one that I saw, and I watched it because they just added it to Netflix last weekend, is the Eli Roth Thanksgiving movie that was the trailer. Yeah. It's really, really stupid. The opening is, so it's just very quickly, it's like a Walmart kind of a place, but it's called Right Mart, but it looks exactly like Walmart. And it's Black Friday, and it's like all these people clamoring to get in, and a riot ensues. And the people, smash the doors in and everything and trample people and all this. And one, the movie knows that it's a dumb movie, but one thing that made me laugh out loud, literally laugh out loud, there's a kid, so it's a group of like high school kids, and one of them is the star baseball player. He's going to go on to be a Major League Baseball player. And he falls down, and somebody steps on his hand, and it's so, and it like, mangles his hand, and it's so obvious that it's a rubber hand. That it literally made me laugh out loud. But then so the first 5 minutes, I just thought, I don't know if I could continue with this. It gets better, but it's still bad. And that fake trailer was so good. And they used a couple of gags from that, but not really well. And they took away all the film grain and all that kind of stuff, which I felt they should have kept that. So it just looks
keep
like
that. That's part of the charm of the thing. It's like,
it just looks like a glossy,
But A24 has got a thing coming out that's a grain, film grain thing, right? It's Halloween, the devil talk show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
That one looks
where they steer into that. I'm like, that's hot right now. They should have done, why would you not do that?
It's just present day. They don't do the grainy stuff. And they do it's Plymouth, Massachusetts. And why they do this in movies, I don't know. But some of the people have the stereotype Massachusetts accent, and some of the people don't.
Well,
and it's just...
Spoiler alert, not everybody in Massachusetts talks like they're from the south side of Boston.
Exactly. And it's just... It always sounds... I've heard... I know it's not exactly the same accent, but I've heard Stephen King say that you can't do a Maine accent in movies and have it be believable because it just seems so... Even if it's authentic, it seems ridiculous, So that was the other one that I watched. And then I went to the theater to see Lisa Frankenstein.
I
have seen it. And I mean, when you watch it, we could do it on the show if you want.
Do you feel like it doesn't quite live up to the trailer?
Yeah, I enjoyed it overall. It's Robin Williams' daughter directed it. Huh. And it's written by Diablo Cody, who, she's a good screenwriter. But I looked it up, the budget was $15 million. And it just felt like, this is one of these things that I don't really have the technical knowledge of acting to, I'm sure there's terms for this. But it felt like, I imagine they probably had a very short shooting window. And it felt like there were times where they needed like another take or two. It almost to me, like I could imagine the actors delivering their line and then just kind of going, okay, what did you think of that one?
Yeah.
And cause it felt like it needed more takes and it needed tighter editing. And they just didn't really have the time for that. I mean, the overall premise of it is really good, and there's a lot of really good dialogue, but it just felt kind of flat.
Yeah.
So I was it wasn't like I was up. It made me a little sad because it was like this could, with just a little bit more fine-tuning it, really could have been kind of a new classic.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's worth a whole episode or not, but I'd say watch it. You know, it wasn't like I hated it. You know, I just wanted it to be a little bit more. You know, I don't know if there's a term for that when it just you could feel the acting. You know.
Yeah.
So it didn't. It felt like people delivering lines part of the time rather than these are actual people. You know. So yeah, those were the things that, have you watched anything recently that,
you know, I did watch something the other night, which is, it's a little blue for our audience, but it's Dix, the musical,
okay.
Which people I know created, there were people that were in this theater group I was in, have now gone on to, like, Bowen Yang is in it and Matt Rogers is one of the leads. And
oh, cool.
Or no, I'm sorry, it's not Matt Rogers. Anyway, you know, it's Nathan Lane is in it. It's musical. I think there are moments in it where I was crying with laughter. It's it is raunchy and very camp and very gay and the music to me, like, so it's a musical, so it's like musical number. I fast forwarded through a lot of the musical parts. Like, I'd listen to one verse and I'd get it, and the writing is very clever and the musical writing is well done, but I didn't need 8 verses of this song. Like, I just those were the least interesting parts to me. It was the interstitial stuff, and it gets so crazy in places that it's just outrageous to the extreme. So I'm not saying don't watch it. I think if any of that sounds appealing to you, you should absolutely check it out. But it is gonzo bonkers crazy.
I mean, it sounds fun. I think, you know, you talked about how hard it is to do comedy horror well. I mean, musicals, this has got to be really tough to do a musical well.
I mean, think of, count out loud the great cinema musicals, right? I mean, there's Singing in the Rain, where you find yourself either dancing along to the choreography in the numbers, and it wasn't a hit at the time, right? That's a retroactive hit that's become a classic. I think in part because it was ahead of its time, but or, you know, and certainly singing along to the songs, you know, maybe there's some Disney numbers you sing along to the songs. I think it's a high bar.
Rocky Horror,
but not,
I'm a
big
not
fan. The whole film, right? The time warp is this incredible sequence, but I mean, damn it, Janet, like, name the other songs. I guess I can. Touch me, right? I can name 3 or 4 of those.
I like, have you ever seen Tommy? Who's Tommy?
Way back when I saw it, but
I mean, it's way out there, but I like it a lot. I think the songs are,
I know, you know, Pinball, I mean, Wizard,
were,
you know,
but, yeah, I mean, they were actual songs that they played on the radio, you know, so.
But I'm just saying that the in film, the musical genre is challenging because,
yeah, for sure.
It's a movie, and then there are these musical numbers, and they're kind of their own animal. So you have to make it feel like the same film, but you have to make those parts just as, if not more, engaging than, like, a musical is a live theater medium to me.
It's always seemed like it makes sense, more sense on the stage than it does in a movie.
Me too. I guess that's what I meant to say, medium. Yeah. It just is, you know, it's so kinetic. You go see Wicked, the musical in you know, the thing, and you see all the people singing, and then you see the movie version, which I guess they're making of Wicked.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it can't be good, but I'm just saying that was, or Aladdin is another example.
Sure.
It was a cartoon first, right? And then it was a stage thing that was a big hit. Disney turns these cartoons into big popular plays, and then they make a live action movie of it, and I'm almost kind of like, is anyone the most interested in the live action film version of it?
You know, yeah, like, True, yeah. Did you ever see The Wiz?
I loved The Wiz as a kid. Yeah, The Wiz is a classic too, yeah.
Is it a was it just a movie or was it a stage?
Well, I don't know. I think it was just a film adaptation, a black film adaptation of The Wizard of Oz, and I think it was a cinematic. It's almost a cult. You call it classic. It's cult classic, but I mean, great music in that, and of course,
nobody talks about it anymore. You know, I mean, that never gets discussed.
Michael Jackson
and Diana Ross. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean,
he's on down the road.
Yeah, I love.
Oh, I watched that. Yeah,
over and over again as a child. You know, it scared me a little bit too. Yeah. I mean, there's some scary stuff in it. But.
Yeah.
But
the Wizard of Oz is supposed
to be. Wizard of Oz. But that, so Dick's the Musical, I mean, that it sounds interesting. I don't remember what it's on.
I don't remember if it's on Max or where it is or Netflix or whatever. But if you spot it, watch a little bit of it. Nathan Lane is super funny and Megan Thee Stallion is in it as a boss.
Hmm.
And it's the storyline of it as it is in between the musical things is a mile a minute and doesn't waste any time. And then I almost feel like then it gets to a musical number and that it downshifts into a gear, you know, like some of the manic madcap pace of it gets put on hold while they do this kind of carefully orchestrated musical number. And then I kind of can't wait to get back to the madcap dialogue in between. But
yeah, that's what for cinema. I mean, that's what's always been strange to me about musicals is where you have, you know, people just speaking and it's just like a normal movie. And then they break out into song, which just always, it takes me out of it, you know, as opposed to, I think it's almost better when it's just the entire thing is. I think Tommy is an example where I don't know if there's any. I think it's all singing. I don't know if there's any actual just dialogue in that movie. You know,
Dick's may have started as a live action thing. I mean, these are people that are writers and performers and musicians in New York, and so they very well might have done this on stage and had a run of it that got some heat, and then they got enough money to make it into a movie and get Nathan Lane, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it just doesn't translate as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that much about it. I know. Yeah. I know these people cause I worked with them, but that's been a decade now. So they've all gone on to be famous. I haven't.
So, all right. Do you have any thoughts about what do you want to do next?
Well, you sent that clip for Cemetery Man.
Yeah. What did you think of that?
That looks fun. I'm not sure I'm in the mood for that. And right next after this one, I had very different movies, but somehow, I don't know. I'd like to think about it.
Okay. Yeah. We can think about it a bit and see what else there is out there.
All right,
but I'm glad to have finally seen Kill List because it was on my radar. I don't want to say list again, but
list kill list
yeah kill, kill list. List. I'm sure there's probably some other new. That's the thing that's always funny to me is where there's stuff in the movie theater and it's like I don't really want to see that in the movie theater. I'll watch that one, and then it's like, and then where do those go? Like it's like I can't find anything that I want to watch.
Right.
So.
Yes, I hear you. We haven't Chris and Chris Talk Movies at gmail.com. That's our handle. We're on the socials. Like, subscribe, leave us a comment. Thank you for listening or watching, as the case may be. And we're not sure what we're going to do next time, but thanks for tuning in. We hope to see you next time, and we'll surprise you.
Yep, it'll be a surprise.
And unless you, my friend, have anything else you would like to add?
I think that's it.
Then, dear listeners, Chris and I will talk to you all next week.